This is Tips from the Top, a Perry Marketing production. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Tips from the Top, a monthly podcast presented by Perry Marketing for B2B software and technology entrepreneurs, marketers, and salespeople. Perry Marketing is a full-service B2B digital marketing agency with a keen focus and deep roots in enterprise technology and software marketing. We understand how software is purchased within enterprise technology organizations, and we know how to market it.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jamie Hood, the creative director at Perry Marketing. Joining me is Tony Perry. Tony is the CEO and chief software advocate at Perry Marketing. And with us today is Dave Kaiser. Dave is someone I consider a true heavy hitter in the enterprise software sales space, with over 20 years' experience as an account executive, sales executive, and manager, much of which has been focused on the Fortune 1000. He is currently in enterprise solution sales and considers himself as much a consultant and collaborator to his clients. We're thrilled to have Dave join us to share his in-depth knowledge of enterprise software sales and marketing. Dave, welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
You've been in software sales and marketing for over 20 years. How have you seen prospecting change from the last two major events that have affected corporate America, being the 2008 crash and more recently coronavirus?
Yeah, it's a good question. And what I've seen is prospecting has just changed dramatically just in the world of enterprise sales, regardless of the two major events that you just mentioned. And what I see a lot of organizations do is heavily focused on pipeline building and prospecting and hiring young green folks to come in and make all of these outbound calls and try to drive as much activity as possible. But what I don't see is that activity turn into actual recognized revenue and value for the organizations that they're working for to sell the solutions that they're trying to get into the marketplace. So prospecting is a passionate topic for me because I see so many sales organizations make the same mistakes over and over and over. And I don't see a lot of sales organizations adapting to this change. And what I mean by that is the consumer is a much more educated consumer than they've ever been before. I personally don't feel that somebody's going to buy because they've been prospected to. I just feel like prospecting is kind of an old age aspect of how to build pipeline. Whereas I think in today's day and age, you have to understand, you have to have something they want. You have to do the right level of marketing to create that intrigue and to create that demand. But most importantly, to create that credibility as to why they need to talk to you. I don't see enough organizations put emphasis on that, and they just put more emphasis on volume and activity.
I think it's a great point, Dave. And I think it brings to mind for me, and I've said it before, I said it on the last podcast, I'll say it on this one and the next one. People don't wake up every day and say, "Hey, I've got to buy some software. There's an event." So you really have to be at the right place at the right time with the right presence. I bought this stand right here, and I probably searched on the internet for a good half an hour at least before I bought this stand that's $39. And if you think about five and six and seven figure dollar software sales, you're going to go to the internet first. And it's a matter of being at the right place at the right time and having the right presence and cadence. And you have to have something come across somebody's desk every day so that when those events do happen, something breaks, somebody gets hacked, you get a new CEO, there's a merger and acquisition, that you're in the right place at the right time. So that's the new way of marketing. And then you have to have tools to monitor that in CRM and marketing automation tools. And this is the new way of selling anything, not just software. I think what you're describing is a lot of people clinging to the old. That's how we did it in the 80s and 90s. You're not calling enough. If you called more, we'd sell more.
Yeah, it's exactly that misconception. And again, it's driven by the idea of building pipeline. You have a lot of middle management trying to get direction and pressure from senior management or investment firms and whatnot, so that you're putting fluff into a pipeline that is never going to turn into actual revenue. And the only way that you can do that is to just have a lot of outbound activity, get somebody who wants to at least take the phone call, which is more than likely not a decision maker, not somebody who has a need. You're just having an open dialogue and you're probably years away from being in a real sales cycle, but you've had a conversation or some junior level person had that conversation. They send that over and set the meeting up for the enterprise rep. you get on the phone and have that conversation, and now you're required to create an opportunity, which is now forecastable revenue that's never going to happen. And you just create this chain of events that's just always going to create a you're kind of behind the eight ball before you start, because you're creating this problem of, I have to go talk about these opportunities that I don't even feel are real. The business right. is trying to count on this business, and they can't, because you're always going to find slips from one quarter to the next, slips from 1 year to the next. And how long do you float these false numbers?
Great point.
Yeah, I see that happen way too often. The other point I think on this that is a missed art right now is, you only get one chance to make a first impression. You have the most junior level people calling in for complex software solutions to large enterprises, why are you putting the most unqualified person in to do the hardest part of the sales equation, which is to create that interest, establish credibility, earn some trust, lead with integrity, and be authentic? These people are too junior, and they're based on volume and numbers. So they're just thinking about, how do I get in and out, in and out, in and out? And I don't really care about the end outcome here. So we're not doing our customer or our potential customer, I don't feel we're doing them a service, because we're just wasting their time with somebody just doing telemarketing versus having the right level of person reach out to the right level of person within that organization and actually try to empathize around what is causing their pain and are they willing to solve that pain? Because those are two critical questions that they may admit they have a pain, but they're not ready to solve it. Then it's not really a qualified opportunity.
That's a great point. Or they might be willing to solve it, but you're not offering enough for them to take action. A lot of our customers are in the mainframe space. And if you go in and you say, hey, deploy the software, and this year we're going to save you $200,000. I'm sorry, in the mainframe space, and probably a lot of the Fortune 500 large sprawling enterprise IT environments, that's not enough return on investment either. You have to go in and you say, put this software in, and next year you'll be $1 million healthier. And even then, it might be more than $1 million worth of trouble to stop what you're doing and deploy these tools. So. Right. It's such a complex cycle of things that have to happen at the right time, in the right order, and with the right people on the phone, as you just said. Those are great points, Dave.
Yeah. And Tony, to that, enterprise software is complex, and enterprises deploying software is even more complex.
Yeah.
And then with the idea of calling in, how many times do you see sales activity or junior level inside business development reps, sales development reps, whatever the acronym they want to call them, are calling in with a script? How many times have you seen a script actually work?
Yeah.
And they're calling in with all about them. Hey, my solution is going to save you 20% on X, or my solution is going to allow you to get faster time to market, or my solution is going to do this. When have they ever asked the organization about how they're doing things today, doing some real, what I call detailed discovery around,
why are you having
pain? Because if you call in at the right level and make it about them and get them to do more of the talking than you, quote, pitching or reading a script, I guarantee you the outcome of that conversation is going to lead to at least a follow-up conversation.
Yeah, great point.
At least the intent of that first call is to lead to the next conversation. But if you go into the call all about you, why would they want to talk to you again? But if you go into that call and ask them the right questions, get them to engage and admit that they have a need, then you start working through how do you position, when do you position, and how do you make this about them, not just, you know, marketing numbers or sales information of, hey, I can save you 20% or I can get you 20% on the market. How are you ever going to prove that if you don't have a clue about their environment or what they're trying to do?
Great point.
You would think that's sales 101, but it's certainly a lost art.
It's a lost art. And honestly, we have a lot of, and I've been through it so many times in my career, it's the never-ending cycle of somebody cares about revenue and numbers, et cetera. And that's all they're looking at. They're looking at spreadsheets. They're looking at numbers. So let's say you're a small organization. I'm going through it now. We got acquired by a new investment firm. Well, this investment firm is going to come in. They're going to have really aggressive targets and goals because they want to make their return back. So they're going to force that down to everybody else downstream. And then it just creates this behavior of activity, 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 and volume, and volume, and volume. I stand on a soapbox all the time. You can ask many of my previous colleagues. I will take quality over quantity any day of the week. I'd rather have two quality conversations versus 20 quantity conversations. And I guarantee you the outcome, if I have those two conversations, I close one of those deals, that's going to be far better than having 20 conversations that don't go anywhere.
Yes, that's a great point.
It's a lost art, Jamie. You would think it's 101. It's just revenue and numbers and targets and Wall Street. All those things supersede common sense, unfortunately. And that's what we find ourselves in, I think, in this day and age.
Yeah, that's a good point. I've often heard Seth Godin talk about that. Seth Godin is the purple cow guy, marketing guru, just a fantastic human as well. But he talks often about the inverted pyramid. It used to be you throw as much at the top and whatever of your funnel and whatever seep to the bottom, that's the gold. Well, he talks about the inverted pyramid where just what you just said, it's better to have five people that are very interested and that have a need than 500 that maybe in a year, five will drop out of the bottom. So
correct.
Great point.
And in that case, Tony, going back to what I said earlier, cold calling or i.e. prospecting is not going to create a sales cycle event. The sales cycle event happens before you get engaged with them because they, the customer, knows they have a need and is trying to solve that need and is researching how to solve that need. If you become one of the solutions to solve that need, they will find you if you've done things correctly. And then when you engage with them, you're engaging at an area of qualification that already exists. You know they have a need. They've already done their research. Per their research, you get into that call where you already have some of that credibility. And now it's a matter of taking that credibility and turning that into and fostering that into a real business conversation, building trust. Because I will say this other soapbox item is people buy from people, but they only are going to buy from people they trust. Yep. And you have a lot of options now in the world today. So I could want something that you have, but if I don't like you, or I'm just not really feeling the love of how you're treating me, and it's just you're trying to sell ice to an Eskimo, I'm going to go to the next guy who has a solution very similar, but I have a much better human experience. That is, I think, a really dramatic change in the last 10 or 15 years is the experience matters more than the product that you're selling.
Great, great point. You said it earlier when you talked about being authentic. Sometimes I'll do some mentoring for the local startup community and I'll do presentations and I'll talk to companies about these startups or these solopreneurs about being authentic. And it's a lot like dating. If you go into your first date with a girl or a guy or whoever, and you talk about me, like you were just talking, you're not going to get a second date. But if you go into that first date and goes, well, tell me about you and what's going on with you and how are you doing? You know, what are you up to? And how can, at the end of this date, how can you feel better about getting together with me and maybe wanting to get together again? It's a lot like dating, a lot like a first date.
Yeah. I, even if I'm hiring or just part of the whole process is, I think authenticity and integrity are really the driving factors how to be successful. If the end person that you're trying to work with and be a trusted advisor for views you as somebody that they can partner with and they feel that they can respect and build that rapport with, they will continue to engage. But if they feel that you're just the guy in for a buck and that's all you're in it for, and as soon as you get that buck, you're on to the next one and they're just another check on your list there, they're not going to feel warm and fuzzy. And unfortunately, that is the stigma that I've had as a sales guy for 20 some odd years. I know people are afraid to talk to salespeople. They don't like it. And quite candidly,
great point.
I don't like going to buy a car. It's a miserable experience and I'm in sales, right? So when you sit there and tell the person, this is what I'm looking for, listen to me. And then they just completely say, yep. And then continually try to pitch you something else that you don't want. You're literally just going, why am I sitting here? What, this is not the right experience. So unfortunately, that car salesman stigma follows even an enterprise solution salesperson, because I'm not calling another sales guy. I'm calling a senior executive, or I'm calling somebody in the business side of things. And they're just going, oh, okay, here's another sales guy trying to pitch or sell me something versus, oh, hey, I need to take that call from Dave because you know what? Dave is offering a conversation and trying to understand the problem that we're experiencing and wants to see if what he has will help actually move the needle and solve my problem. And if so, great. But if not, there's no love lost, right? There's a lot of times I've walked away from situations where I've been in very early stages just saying, you know what? I don't think this is the right fit, or I don't think you're ready yet for this level of solution that we're talking about here. So do these things first, and maybe a year or two from now, we can have a different conversation. Think about just walking away from and having the integrity to just say, look, this is not the right time for this. I could sell this to you, but you're not going to be successful. You're going to be frustrated. Now you're my problem child. I don't want to manage a problem child because that's going to take time away from me being able to go sell to the people who want to buy. So there's a lot of finagling in this whole thing. Prospecting, as you can tell, is a passionate topic for me.
Yeah, me too. And you open up another plug for me to throw out CRM and marketing automation. You find you're not the right fit. Let's talk again next year. It's the CRM and marketing automation systems that's going to give you touch points with that prospect over time that you really don't even have to do. If you've got some canned emails where you want to sit down and pound out 3 or 4 emails and put them in your marketing automation system and send one out in 2 months, send the second one out in 3 months, send the third one out in 4 months, all of that can be automated and you can stay in touch with that prospect over a year's time quite easily with the right CRM marketing automation system.
I totally agree. Those nurture drips are important, provided that within the nurture drip or marketing automation, it's meaningful content relative to what you know about that customer. Because Tony, what I've also seen is you put them into a canned nurture drip and they're getting emails, which they consider spam because it's not relative to what we just talked about a month or so ago. Their need is X. Refining that nurture campaign over the year, I think is what really helps move the needle, because now you're continually giving them bits of information, touch points relative to what I know about your problem. So that way, when we're ready to engage, you know that I'm aware of what you're trying to solve, and you know that I've got the solution that can solve it. Now it's a matter of coming together and figuring out how do you buy instead of how do I sell to you, right? And that's a whole different dynamic we could talk about too, which is selling, understanding how people sell versus instead of talking about how you sell. I think there's got to be a whole different conversation about how enterprises buy, which is another aspect.
It really is. We like to pride ourselves in not just being technology marketers, but technology marketers who understand how the Fortune 1000 purchases software and searches for software and researches software. But you bring up a great point about right message, right content. And it reminds me of the importance of data, good data in your CRM marketing automation system, and good personas within that data, the who, what, when, why about contact in a marketing automation CRM system, and then messaging to those personas, and those messages can be only as good as the data in your system. When we first engage with a client, the first thing I ask them, a new client, is how's your data? What kind of data have you got? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's an uphill battle if the data is bad. They don't even think about data. They go, oh yeah, data. Well, I don't know. What do you say about data and personas and the quality of your contacts in your systems?
I think it is critical. Now, you just triggered a thought though here, Tony, too. And I just had this conversation yesterday internally within my organization with my marketing team. Titles are one data point that you capture in your CRM system, et cetera. But a title and a persona are two different things, right? So like you might be a director of whatever, but your persona is you're the change agent for X. So now since I'm selling X, you're the champion and the change agent who's going to drive that, even though your title may not be C-level or whatnot. I need to pair up with the change agent who's going to then help you navigate the complexities of an enterprise, because enterprises don't buy without it being decision by committee. And I've seen this too many times, right? You're not talking to one person who then gets an approval from his boss and they buy, especially when you're talking about 6-7 figure type of deals. You're looking at large enterprises bringing different business units together, creating these committees or whatever you want to call them to make a conscious and consensus decision, because whatever this enterprise application is that you're going to roll out is going to impact everybody. You're not rolling it out for just this one business unit or for just this one team. You're trying to sell to a centralized enterprise. Well, if the enterprise is fragmented and one group makes a decision and forces it down to everybody, it's going to be dead before it starts, because you're going to get that resistance of all those people who said, well, I didn't make that decision. Now you're thrusting this on me and I don't want it. So resistance is going to be one of those impediments that's going to delay the value. And then when you're trying to have that renewal or implementation conversations, you're getting into these frustrated modes. Versus when I was working with a large, I guess they're probably a Fortune 50 or Fortune 10. I mean, I had to sell to a committee of 30 people. I mean, we had to go multiple times and sit in front of these 30 people groups and do the dog and pony show presentation and Q&A sessions and all those things. But to get 30 people to agree on something is not an easy task by any means, especially in this day and age. But when you're talking about value, when you're talking about their needs, when you're tying their needs into how you can align with them and partner with them, and when you're really leading with the authenticity of, hey, well, you know what? I'm going to be real with you. That's kind of outside the scope. Or, hey, these are things that we can help solve. And you're just not trying to overpitch and oversell. And you're just trying to bring everybody to the consensus of, we need to solve this problem. And we're here to solve this problem together. Why are we fighting each other internally? That is where you win. And that's where the deals go from $100,000 to $1 million, because now you're getting buy-in across the enterprise. So Tony, did that long-winded way to answer your question?
Yes.
Dave, you mentioned conversations with your marketing team. We see so often that sales and marketing are on two separate sides of the building, and physically and mentally. And when we see the sales and marketing staffs working together, we see the results, the proven results from that relationship. Have you seen a change over the years in importance in the resources that assist account managers, resources like technical pre-sales, product management, and even marketing?
Absolutely. So touching on a few things there, marketing and sales need to work together, and they need to work smartly together. And Tony, going back to the data conversation, we live in an age now that some of the most powerful companies in the world may not be the biggest revenue drivers, but they are the biggest data collector and providers: Google, Facebook, et cetera, right? We live in an era now that I could say something. I might say Nike just right now, and my phone knows that. So the next time I go on somewhere, I'm going to get some ad for a Nike shoe, right? We're getting so targeted, and we can be so smart by leveraging that technology. What we need to do is get better at understanding that in enterprise sales, we need to act the same way that retailers are. We need to be very smart about the data that we've collected and how we market based on that data versus spamming and generally marketing. So marketing and sales, I think, need to be very smartly, tightly coupled together. And another thing to that, Jamie, I had a conversation with my organization, because one of the things that we're trying to do, which I think is fascinating and unique, and I haven't seen a lot of other organizations do this, is partner. So my marketing team and myself working with some of my largest customers to say, how can we pair up and market to other business units within your organization together? So, Mr. Customer XYZ, you're a great customer of ours. We get a lot of revenue from you each year, but we're only in this facet of your organization. How do we get to this? Let's market together. Let's figure out what groups we need to socialize to. What are some of the right messaging to do? So basically pairing up with my customer and my marketing team to do marketing for our solution within that organization. That, to me, I think is going to be game changing. And we're starting to launch that right now. I will say throughout my career, I would not have been successful if I didn't have the right team. This isn't about a one individual scenario. This is a team sport. The more complicated the solution you're selling, if you don't have the right technical pre-sale engineer, you're not going to be successful. One of the reasons why I think I have been so successful is I've been very lucky with the pairings that I've had with my technical resources. And one of the things that I also think is important is longevity of a team. Every time you keep switching people, you're switching personalities, you're switching different aspects of how people work together. If you found a group, myself and my pre-sale engineer, if we are two peas in a pod and we can go on site and we can immediately just relate to our customers, they see how we relate to one another. I know when he needs to take a minute to take a sip of water. I know how to interject and monitor and really drive the conversation. I know where he's going before he gets there. He knows where I'm going before I get there. It's a nice ebb and flow. People feel that and they want to be part of more of that. But when you're going in there and you got a technical resource who just really is just a technical guy and has no people skills, that's going to be hard to kind of get through those kinds of things. Product management, I think, kind of happens behind the scenes. It's kind of sales operations or sales management or all these kinds of things. There's a million things that need to be done when you're selling to these large enterprises. So it's, you can get the win of the why we want your software. The buying aspect might be a 6 to 9 month process from getting the technical win. When you're doing that buying process, it's all basically project management. It's legal folks, security folks, architecture reviews. It's just basically being the quarterback to bring all the right people to the table at the right time. I kind of say, I call myself a puppet master. My job is to bring the right people to the dance at the right time to bring value to that piece of the conversation. Then I'll be viewed as the guy who doesn't try to come in with all the answers. I'm bringing the right people in for this area of expertise, and we're managing this process to closure. That has really been how I've just been successful over the years, is just realizing it's not my job to do everything. It's my job to be the quarterback as an enterprise sales manager.
That's so perfect. I've told Jamie and others, the best account managers and salespeople I've ever worked with were the best schedulers. They knew who to have in the room, when to have the right person in the room, and how to bring the right people together so you can get another meeting, right? You've got a 9, 12, 18 month sales cycle. You want another meeting, and having the right people in the room at the right time to answer those questions is paramount. And you sound like you do it perfectly, Dave. You're the Johnny Unitas of enterprise software sales. We're happy to have you here.
We're floating the old school today, y'all.
I appreciate that. And you're right, because how often and how frustrating is it to come to a meeting and your client brings all these right people to the meeting, and then you don't have the right person to answer certain questions. So now you have to then go back, and you're just delaying what's already a complex logistical scenario. You're delaying it further by not bringing the right people to answer the right questions at the right time. So that can be viewed as frustrating. And more importantly, what that is it's a delay. And the one thing that any salesperson should know is time kills deals. The longer it takes to get it done, the more excuses, something's going to happen, a senior leader's going to change and derail something, or budget got taken for another priority fire drill, whereas they were ready to go with you, but now another fire drill just happened, and that's more important. And the C-suite says, take that budget and go. We can come back to this because it was more of a nice to have, not a must have. This is a must have, and we have to get through that.
Yeah, great point.
Which also, Tony, ties into kind of everything we've been talking about is we've got to make a lot of these organizations and prospecting understand that you're not a nice to have. You've got to be viewed as a must have.
Yeah.
It's a different level of conversation, because if you're viewed as a nice to have, you're always, even at the 11th hour of signatures, you're always in jeopardy of not getting that deal done.
Yeah.
But if you're viewed as, I have to have this and I have to have it because of this need in this time frame, you've got compelling events to work backwards from, and you can hold everybody accountable to meet those compelling events, and then not having to worry about, you know, coming out of left field, which I've learned the hard way, comes out of left field and you lose budget, or it's taking too long to get through legal review, and now they found a different path to take, and now you're just kind of stuck as to, okay, I had a forecastable deal that was in commit stage. Now I got to go to my leadership and tell them that they decided to go make another decision or something. So that's the difficult.
That's tough. I know.
Great stuff, Dave. So coronavirus has created an explosion of startups and solopreneurs. What's your advice for standing out from the crowd for these small software vendors being heard and, more importantly, shortlisted?
Yeah, that's a good question. A lot of what I think, going back to what we talked about earlier, is you've got to be credible. And it's hard for a startup to be credible because nobody may not know who they are, right? One of the things that I think would be smart is leveraging a customer that you have and case studies and testimonials, sell through them and with them instead of just trying to call up and pitch and read a script and trying to just create volume like we were talking about earlier. Small software startups don't have the benefit of the brand recognition that the large enterprise software vendors have. However, the smaller organizations are usually more nimble. They're easier to deal with. They can respond to change, and they're more willing to have you be a voice to them to influence their product roadmap. So if I'm selling to Fortune 50 company, and they get to influence our roadmap, which is to their benefit, there's a lot to be said about that versus them just buying from IBM or them buying from Oracle or whomever. However, with that all being said, a lot of these small startups do a lot of the things that we talked about at the beginning of this podcast, where they just are hiring junior folks, they're giving them a script and they're telling them to pound the phones and make 50 calls a day or 100 calls a day and just trying to get anybody with a heartbeat to take the phone call and have a conversation. That to me is not a recipe for success. I think the recipe for success would be is what, if you are a business, you've landed some client somewhere. So you've got some level of a customer base. You've got to have an understanding of some level of the value they're getting from whatever it is that you've been providing to them. How do you use that to then put that into your message of how you're going to go about selling and engaging these clients or these prospects that actually want to talk to you? Another thought here and a recommendation, I haven't done this and I will coin it here and I'll ask for all the royalties later. Instead of hiring junior reps or kids out of college as the first time start, why not hire a retired CIO? And you know what? For 2 hours a day, you make the phone call to a CIO at X company. So now you'd have a guy who says, I can call up Tony. I know what it's like to live in your shoes. I've lived in your shoes. Here's what I've done. And here's what kept me up at night. I'm just helping out this small startup company here because I think that this is a valuable solution. And if I knew about them when I was in your shoes, this would have helped me sleep better at night. Are you willing to engage in a conversation? Think about the dynamic of that conversation versus some 25-year-old kid reading a script saying, I'm going to save you 20% on this and I'm going to do it. You know what? They're getting a million of those a day. I get 1,500 of those emails I've got somebody who's been calling me now 5 times in a row. And I'm like, do you not realize that you just left me this voicemail an hour ago? The same person prospecting, right? And then they're going to LinkedIn message me with these cute little kind of things that try to get you to respond or these other cute things that they do. And then it's almost insulting when they're like, well, I think that, you know, I've been trying to reach out to you and you haven't responded to me. And now
I break up with me,
you know, and I'm like, wait a minute, I never even responded to you. So how are you breaking up with me? Right.
Yeah.
So,
great points, Dave. And you know, you've circled totally back around to what you said early in this conversation about being authentic and storytelling and having content. You know, those are all things we do. And we go in and with new customer engagements and we do a semblance of a content audit and look at what stories you have to tell and let your work and your relationships speak for your company. And the other thing you touched on that was really perfect and spot on is creating partnerships, not client software vendor engagements. You want to let the client help you develop your company and develop your solutions and create that partnership where they want to tell success stories too. These are, if you're talking about selling into the Fortune 500 and the Fortune 100, they have boards to report to. They have investors to report to. Yep. And they don't want to hear about, yeah, we spent $1 million on software and then we had to buy it again because that just was a bad move 2 years later. Right. They need to tell these stories as well. So partnerships, engagements where you're authentic and you're telling stories that complement both organizations is really the way to go. And leveraging your technology and not calling somebody until they're ready to be called, but in a better world, having them call you because you're at the right place at the right time.
Yeah, I mean, Tony, you're absolutely right. And going back to kind of this whole prospecting theme, I feel like what a lot of organizations are trying to do is put it on the burden on sales instead of on marketing. Whereas I feel like marketing needs to be able to drive the engagement of making sure that you've marketed correctly, you've messaged correctly, you've created that level of demand, you've created that level of need. And when they're ready to research and find you, then you're engaging in those conversations correctly versus somebody just telemarketing. I mean, how many times do you answer the phone for a telemarketer? You'll find a needle in a haystack. Don't get me wrong. I mean, one out of the thousands would be like, oh my God, I'm so glad you called me because I'm actually researching that right now. That's not scalable and it's not repeatable. And
great point.
You're not, and I don't feel like you're setting up these junior sales folks for success either. I mean, these kids are quoted now on setting up meetings. They're not quoted on actually booking revenue.
Yeah, that's a great point.
That mind shift. I don't know, but it's been in the last 10 years. So there's a lot to be said about how to go about these practices. Data is everything on who you should target, when you should target, and why. And I think marketing efficiently and effectively is going to make the sales prospecting a much more seamless and a much more palatable experience versus the way it's done right now. Marketing does its thing in its own world, as you talked about, Jamie. They might be in two different sides of the building. Sales is just pounding phones and saying, hey, these are qualified leads because somebody clicked a button. Well, just because this person clicked a button, you're going to say they're more qualified than this person who didn't. But yet I know if I do my real research, this is the guy I really need to be talking to. He just didn't want to click further in the website and download the white paper or
great
whatnot.
Point.
So I'm going to ignore him. But I'm going to categorize this other guy who clicked everything and has no authority to make a decision as the most qualified lead. That to me is a huge conflict from how we go about things between sales and marketing.
Great points. You're supporting all the things that we evangelize: data, buying signals, CRM, marketing automation, right place, right time. And we incidentally have a white paper that we wrote about being at the right place at the right time. So I'll shoot that to you and you can take a look at it. Be happy to get your feedback.
Yeah, no, I'd love to take a look at that. And I mean, right time, right place for the right reason is something I say often. And that's a hard thing to know how to do. And you're getting a lot of reps are getting pressure from all aspects of things. So they're just doing whatever, whenever, however, instead of doing the right thing at the right time for the right reason. So I also say this on my soapbox a lot, and maybe this is a concluding statement, but comp plans are going to dictate behavior for sales individuals.
Yeah. Yeah. I say they're coin operated.
The right salesperson is going to figure out how to manipulate their comp plan to the best of them. Right. But in doing so, if the organization wants you to do X, then compensate them to do so. And the sales individuals are going to do those things. But again, just volume and activity, nobody's comped on volume and activity. They're comped on actually delivering revenue. And somewhere, somehow, this art of actionable, bookable revenue isn't held to as a high standard as volume and activity. And I think part of that, Tony, is so many organizations, especially the small ones, tying back into the small organization question, they're so worried about looking and perception to get bought. So activity matters. Whereas I think, okay, activity is one thing so that you can have this perception of, oh my God, look at our pipeline and we should be acquired for, you know, X amount. But if none of that's real, how is any real qualified and experienced rep going to stick around? Because you're not making money and getting compensated by having conversations. You're getting compensated by bringing deals to closure, and you're compensated based on the value of that deal. So too often small organizations don't look at it that way, Jamie, tying into that final question about advice for small companies. So I think there's a lot to be said there.
Again, great stuff, Dave. David Kaiser, thank you for your valuable insight. Tony Perry, always fun to pick your brain on B2B software marketing for the small to medium software vendor. You guys truly lived up to the name of our podcast, Tips from the Top. Thanks everyone for listening. I hope you have enjoyed today's conversation as much as I did. Please visit us at perrymarketing.com
subscribe to our podcast, and join us again next month. We will talk again.
Be sure to join us next month for another episode of Tips from the Top. And you can always visit perrymarketing.com for our podcast archive and other sales and marketing content to help you sell more software.